This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we get an accent from New York there, and we're talking to a guy from Texas named Aaron Deese, exploring dogmen. Now, quite often when a particular region has a lot of strange phenomena of one category, and we're talking about dogmen, werewolves, whatever here, do you find other things going on there, Bigfoot, UFOs, etc.?
Yes, 100 times yes. And there's actually the first couple chapters of the book I spend sort of trying to set the stage, because my goal was to take the reader on this journey with me. Like, look, it's not just a collection of stories. This is why I'm convinced by this phenomena. And in order to do that, you have to kind of set the stage, set the background. And Texas is a deeply, deeply strange place, deeply paranormal place, depending how you want to put it. I could spend another 2 years, which is about how long, you know, this book took as far as research and everything, doing a write-up on UFOs in Texas. We could talk about ghosts. We could do just haunted hotels. I can name you 3 notoriously haunted hotels right off the top of my head that have been featured, you know, on TV and major ghost hunting shows. Bigfoot sightings all over the map. If you go to the BFRO website, they're just everywhere. What else? Latin American folklore. We mentioned a little while ago, if you want to get into La Llorona, La Lechuza, El Silbón, like there's so much here. And it was actually kind of difficult when I first started talking to Small Town Monsters, you know, about being on the STM publishing lineup, to nail down a topic that I thought would make for the right book. And I think I pitched them 5 or 6 ideas. I sent Heather Mosier, who is the most patient editor anyone's ever had, I sent her this long, rambling Word document with all these bullet points and all these ideas, and the Dogman Triangle is the one that came out on top. But Texas is a very, very, very strange place. Yeah, absolutely.
Strange place? How so? I mean, other than the politics, of course.
Yeah, specifically with regard to, aside from the fact that we're born with guns in our hands, no, specifically just with regard to paranormal phenomena, folklore, and even just pieces of strange history, you know, things that don't fall into the paranormal but are just odd. Like, for example, and this is one thing I was excited to talk about in the book, if you go out to Kerrville, there are some historical military installations there that date back to the Civil War, prior to the Civil War. And one of the things they tried to do out of Kerrville at one time was bring camels over to the central United States, because it was theorized that they would do well in the American Southwest. It's very hot, it's very dry. I'm looking at the weather meter on my desktop as we're speaking right now, and it is 104 degrees outside. So great environment for camels, and they actually did very well. They were going to expand the program, and then the Civil War happened, and, you know, all resources, all manpower had to go to that, so the program was abandoned. But they released these camels into the wild, and there's these stories floating around that for years people were seeing wild camels in Texas, in the American Southwest. And that's just one example of an odd piece of history down here, you know, that, again, is not paranormal, but is very strange. Of course, the Kennedy assassination took place here, and you could argue that that has become the most hotly debated conspiracy theory in American history. That's Dallas. So, and everything is haunted, man. You throw a rock, and you're going to hit something that's haunted. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. So many ghosts.
You know, let's visit a haunted house. Have you checked these out? What do you know about them?
So we actually, my wife and I stayed in the Menger Hotel last month, you know, and that's ridiculously haunted. The hotel for the website states that they have 32 individual spirits on the property, and it sits right next door to the Alamo, which is also notoriously haunted. And even in just our brief little time there, you know, I'm not a hardcore ghost hunter. I don't have $20,000 worth of equipment behind me. But even just using simple audio recorders and motion capture cameras, we picked up a couple of strange things that were still kind of looking into and vetting through some of our friends who are a little more experienced in that stuff. So, you know, you don't even have to spend a lot of time. We spent one night there, and we had some odd experiences. So it doesn't even take a lot of time. That's been my takeaway so far.
Interesting. Maybe that explains, for example, why when we watch these ghost hunting shows, in 43 minutes, invariably something weird happens.
Yeah, I think there's an element to that, you know, and then there's the other side of the coin where if we're talking about pop culture and mainstream media, you know, you have to tell a story. You have to get people to watch the show. And how do you, without naming any specific examples, how do you get a TV show to run for 20-odd seasons? you catch people's attention. But, yeah, I think in some cases, you know, these places are just so deeply saturated with strange activity, paranormal activity, you know, pick your poison. It does at a certain point kind of become inevitable, you know.
Well, I think that's why a lot of people who research cryptids, such as the Dogman, eventually end up thinking that a lot of these sightings have some kind of paranormal aspect to them.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And there's a lot of conjecture in the paranormal community that, and there has been for a long, long time. John Keel wrote about this in The Eighth Tower, that, you know, all of this stuff is the result of what John Keel referred to as the super spectrum, what some other people might refer to as the djinn or the fae, of something that all of this stuff is connected. All of this stuff is the result of the same thing. And they'll point to cases like Skinwalker Ranch, where you have a geographically small area, but where you have this mixed bag of paranormal activity that just keeps popping up again and again and again and again. So I think that plays into that idea. If all of it has a spectral link, maybe it's all connected. But, you know, we could go down that rabbit hole for years.
Well, okay, now you mentioned the Skinwalker Ranch, and you told the weirdest story that you had ever run across about the guy who was shooting the dogmans with a very high caliber rifle. And it reminds me of a story from Skinwalker Ranch of the original owners, that they were out one evening looking at their calves when a very large wolf type of creature actually approached them and appeared to be almost tame until it grabbed one of the calves by the snout, and they ended up shooting it, not harming it. They actually blew some of its hair off, but it just kind of like turned around and then walked away after, you know, they fired a number of not only handguns, revolvers, and rifle shots into it. You know, this is something that we've heard before in other cases. And again, we were talking about how a lot of these witnesses may have been armed, but didn't even think about shooting at them. But the cases that we have run across, Bigfoot included, where shots have been fired, it's almost just like, you know, these creatures are just like, stop it, you're annoying me.
Yes, yes. And that, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I do, inevitably, I make that comparison in the book. But even going back further than Skinwalker Ranch, we have two old stories in Texas that are kind of along those same lines. And I won't, you know, I'll be brief, but you have the Converse werewolf, wherein one of these things is alleged to have set upon and killed a young man. And when his father and the townspeople discovered him, you know, they went off looking for him with their guns. They opened fire on this wolf creature. And it, you know, took however many rounds and then just walked off on two legs, didn't seem to care. And then we have the story of the Vider werewolf, which is, in my opinion, one of the best documented cryptid cases anywhere at any time, because we have dates, we have times, we have the physical address, we have detailed coverage by an area newspaper, we have response by law enforcement, and law enforcement went on the record saying, yes, I saw this thing. But there was a young man named Bobby Bussinger, who's about 20 years old, just got married. He and his wife Becky were living in a house very close to a tree line, and they had been quote-unquote hounded, another pun for you, hounded by one of these things for a succession of nights.
Okay, here we go again with the puns.
It's inevitable. It's inevitable.
We're going to be hounded.
Hounded by dogmen. But finally, Bobby said enough is enough. He took his 12-gauge shotgun outside. That's how much detail we have. We know what kind of firearm he used. And he shot this thing point-blank range from, according to the newspaper, just a few feet away. And it kept coming. It shrugged it off and kept coming. So we have the Converse werewolf back in the 1800s. We've got the Vider werewolf in the mid-century. And then you've got these modern reports, you know, like John out in Dallas, who's taking shots at him, and they don't seem to care.
Let's break it here. More with Aaron and Tim and Gene. And by the way, they should have used a gun with a silver bullet. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So I raised that kind of in jest at the end of the segment. Okay, if these creatures are immune to normal gunfire, silver bullets.
But isn't that a Hollywoodism?
I think, I mean, it's a Hollywood thing, but I think it's a it's adapted from old folklore, because again, you have associations with different metals and different materials as being supernaturally endowed. You know, like I've mentioned the Fae a couple times, but they don't like iron, you know, so witches, warlocks, if you've entered a pact with the devil, maybe you don't like silver. So it is a Hollywood thing, but it's one of those things we can kind of trace depending on what cultural background you're looking at.
I'm interested in a little bit more detail on the, you said it was the Vider case, is that Vider, Texas?
Yes, Vider, Texas.
Yeah, what was going on with that? I mean, that sounds like a really interesting case.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of went on a tangent about that a moment ago, but
I love tangents. Go for it.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. Right? It's documented so well, again, as far as dates and times and who was there and what they saw, law enforcement response, law enforcement confirming the story. It takes place right there at the edge of the border of Texas with Louisiana. And that's interesting tangentially because, of course, in Louisiana, we have the Rougarou, which is descended from French-Canadian and French folklore. So it takes place right there at the corner of the triangle, very close to the Houston area cluster. But then it's also very close to Louisiana, where you have this whole other category. Are these things the same thing? Are they connected somehow? I don't know. Maybe, probably, maybe not. But it's one of my favorite cases for a number of reasons, partially because it's so well documented, and then partially because it geographically falls into this very, very interesting place.
What kind of sightings, first of all, when was this taking place?
Yeah, so the Vider werewolf was in the 60s. Forgive me, there's so many of them.
I understand.
Yeah, but again, this is one of those that, because we have so much documentation, I'm honestly surprised it isn't talked more about in, you know, the cryptozoology community, because this is what we look for. We look for this detailed documentation. We look for these witness names and times and all of this stuff. Yeah, it's a fascinating case.
Yeah, because for the most part, dogmen sightings are usually just one-off. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody will see one, and then that's it. And it is rather unusual that you would have a flap of sightings in you know, one generalized location.
Yes, and again, very often we see this kind of trend where someone sees something like this, they report it to the authorities. The authorities arrive on the scene and they don't see anything. That's the end of the encounter. It's just this person's word against theirs. And in this case, you have Deputy Jack Reeves, who spoke to the reporter and said, "Yeah, no, I saw this thing. I chased it." They kind of played this game of cat and mouse where it would show up, the deputy would get his lights on the trees, and it would retreat kind of into the underbrush. So they played this sort of back-and-forth game for, doesn't specify how long, presumably a couple of hours, and then the bussengers finally fled the property. They're like, "Nah, that's enough. We're not going back." And you can actually, there's a picture in the book of the property. The address is listed in the newspaper article, so unless they've renumbered the streets in the interim, we can actually get on Google Maps and look at the location where this occurred. And the picture that's on Google Maps is very consistent with what's described in the story.
Well, that's something else that can be consistent when it comes to certain cryptid creature sightings, is that game of cat and mouse, just like you said, where whatever it is, you know, that they're seeing will just be out of reach. It's just right there in the tree line, and then, you know, the police with the dogs come, chase it around for a while, can't find anything, and then it shows up on the other side of town. Whether it be Dogman, Bigfoot, or the screaming monkey, screaming kangaroo monkeys.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is one of those things that we do see kind of over and over again. Another notorious case, the Hopkinsville goblins, or the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter. You know, these little goblin-like entities played cat and mouse with these folks all day long. A lesser-known case is the Caracas dwarves over in Venezuela. You had these guys apparently getting into physical altercations with witnesses. That's a fascinating case. So, and it's kind of funny because a lot of folks, like we talked about earlier, regard this phenomena as being even less plausible than Bigfoot, or even less plausible than some other cryptozoological phenomena. But if we sit down and look at the history, look at the reports and the eyewitness encounters, it really does slot in with what we see in other cryptid cases. Yeah.
Yeah, the Venezuela case that you referred to, I mean, these things that allegedly were spotted coming out of a landed UFO
Yes.
were hairy and had claws.
Yeah, like little, for our Star Wars fans, the little Ewok guys, basically, with very nondescript faces and apparently laser weapons or something that could paralyze people. That is a fascinating case. I mean, it's one I particularly love. Yeah. And it took place the year before the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter, which is an interesting little fact.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the Kelly case, I mean, that one's fascinating because, like what we were talking about earlier, the inhabitants of the house spent all night shooting at these things with no apparent damage.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, we can draw lines and parallels anywhere we like. You know, human beings love to look for patterns, but what is it with these strange entities being impervious to gunfire? And is there a connection between cases like, you know, the Caracas dwarves and the Hopkinsville goblins and things like the Dogman? I'm sorry, I'm not the host. Maybe it's not my place to ask questions, but that's...
Hey, listen, it's an open show. I wanted to ask you something, though. I want to just kind of... just refine this discussion. And that is, when someone shoots at these creatures, where do the bullets go? Are they absorbed, or do they just bounce off like Superman?
That is an excellent question. That's an excellent question. And speaking with John, he kind of describes it in a way that it sounds like they're just sort of bouncing off, sort of ricocheting, or having an effect similar to the Skinwalker Ranch wolf, where it, you know, there's some bleeding and there's some blood splatter, but it doesn't seem to care, doesn't seem to notice. And the follow-up question to that inevitably is, okay, well, where's the blood sample, where's the hair sample? And I don't know. I don't have those in my possession, sadly. But, you know, that seems to kind of be the running description. As far as the Converse werewolf and the Vider werewolf, those, while we do have... Well, for the Vider werewolf, we have a lot of details. The Converse werewolf is basically a folktale. Those we don't have as detailed of a description as to what the effect of the actual ballistics were on the creature, other than that it kept moving after it was shot.
And you think here, if the shells bounced off, maybe you could take DNA readings from them to see if they came in contact with anything with the weird DNA. That's a problem I have, too. I'm going to ask you about that, which is when we see these creatures, we can't get samples of anything that is provably paranormal or something unusual. Oh, and before I forget, I want to remind everyone that Aaron will be back for the After the Paracast podcast, and that is available exclusively for members of the Paracast Plus. You can check out that and sign up at theparacast.plus, theparacast.plus. We'll get into more of this, dogmen, werewolves, shapeshifters, Bigfoot, whatever, with Aaron, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. A suspect is on the run after shooting and killing four people in a town about 30 miles south of Atlanta early on Saturday. Authorities have identified the suspect as Andre Longmore, and they say he's in his mid-50s. Escape prisoner Michael Burham has been captured following a week-long hunt for the dangerous fugitive in Pennsylvania. Donald Trump on Saturday night was addressing supporters in West Palm Beach, Florida. Presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is under fire after suggesting COVID-19 was designed to be ethnically targeted. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is said to be doing well after being rushed to a Tel Aviv area hospital on Saturday, suffering from dehydration. Netanyahu will remain in the hospital as doctors continue doing tests on the 73-year-old. I'm Jerry Varmash, USA News.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunnyvae heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunnyvae heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunnyvae heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
This is Tracy Torme, screenwriter-producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, secret here. When Tim speaks in those weird voices, he is shape-shifting. Right, Tim?
All the time, Gene. All the time.
Yeah, otherwise, they catch you. But that's the thing that bothers me, Aaron, is that we don't have any DNA or any waste product from one of these creatures to prove what they are.
We don't. And that comes up a lot when you're talking about this stuff, is where's the hard evidence? And one, to play devil's advocate, one idea I have about that is, well, would we necessarily know? If we're talking about dogmen or upright canines, if we get a sample of this DNA, how do we know it's going to look different from anything that we would see for another canine or another canine hybrid? And we do know in Texas we have several animals that are mixtures of different canine breeds. There's the Galveston wolves, which are a mix of Mexican red wolf DNA and coyotes. There's the Texas terror dog, aka the Texas chupacabra, which we do have DNA on file for those. And we know that they're a mix of, again, Mexican red wolf, coyote, and domestic dog. And if we found the remains of one of these upright walking canines in the wild, you know, decomposition happens very quickly. Scavengers and bacteria, insects, all that fun stuff, you know, will break down a body fairly rapidly in the heat. Again, we talked about the heat here in Texas. You want to talk about speeding up decomposition. So if we do have a sample of one of these things, maybe it's some fur, maybe it's some blood matter, maybe it's some waste, what is that DNA going to look like, and how do we know that it's going to be something different? And that probably does not explain every case wherein we might go, well, there should be some kind of a sample on file, but there may be dogman DNA in a database somewhere, and we just have no idea because we don't know what that looks like.
Well, that's the problem with DNA analysis, is that if it comes out to be something, an unrecognized species, it comes out as inconclusive. There's no database to go on. Even if you were able to find, you know, say like scat or fur or something like that, if it's a completely different species, an unrecognized, currently unrecognized species, there's nothing. So it would be inconclusive, the results would be.
Yeah. With that in mind, the only way to know for a fact that we had a DNA sample and to prove it, you know, you'd have to be able to prove it, would be to have one of these things in a cage and to have a veterinarian do a blood draw. That's, in my mind, the only way you can say conclusively, this is what this is. Unless, of course, you know, we found a body, da-da-da. But again, that's a whole other can of worms. So,
well, one of the things that I've observed is that you have a lot of these older stories of these encounters, and there was the one that you had referred to. I can't remember what the name of it is. And you said it's almost like folklore.
Oh, the Converse.
The Converse case, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, so you've got the Converse case where this thing basically ate a kid. And then you have, I think back to the Beast of Jalavon in France, where this thing over several years ate a number of people.
Mm-hmm. Over 100 recorded attacks. Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's something that you're not, we at least as far as we know, we don't see anymore. People see these things, but you don't see those kinds of deadly encounters that you used to in the past.
Yeah, and a part of that is because, you know, we have pushed and extirpated wolves from the vast majority of the populated places where they used to live. They were once rampant all throughout Texas. They were hunted, you know, with extreme prejudice, and now we don't really see them here anymore. Same in many parts of Louisiana, the same in parts of England. You know, there were wolves here at one time, and rural France, wolves were everywhere. And the Gévaudan case is so fascinating because it's one of those that 300-odd years later, we're still talking about. And we're still debating. And inevitably, it comes up when you're having discussions about werewolves or dogmen, even though it probably doesn't fit that profile. Mm-hmm. One of the theories I really like that makes sense to me is that this could have been some kind of a hybrid or mutant creature that due to a random intersection of canine DNA, wolves, dogs, what have you, you know, it was unnaturally aggressive. It pursued human beings as a food source because there are plenty of stories about Labate, you know, foregoing easy prey in favor of human victims. You get these aberrant behaviors and these strange, ghastly appearances, which are exaggerated over time and in the retelling. But ultimately, what you had is one of the theories is a canine hybrid. And that could be what we're looking at in Texas. Some of the folks I interviewed for this project were veterinary professionals, my wife being one of them. And they'll tell you that, yeah, we see all kinds of strange mutations and aberrations in canine DNA because it's possible for these breeds to intermix with each other. So maybe the reason we're seeing one-off specimens and we're not finding breeding populations or we're not finding, you know, a lot of remains is because these are one-offs. You know, they may not even be the same quote-unquote species. Maybe they're infertile and they can't reproduce, which is common a lot of the time when you have, you know, mutants or hybrids. I do talk about that one in the book. Again, comparisons to Labate are just inevitable. And that's one of the theories I like to toss around is that perhaps this was a canine hybrid thing that we've got going on.
Now, that's an important thing, too, with pet owners, that unless you really want to do breeding, you will neuter your pet, your dog, your cat, so they can't breed whatever they are.
You could literally end up with a werewolf in your house if you don't. So,
well, I think of it this way. There are lots of dogs I've seen where I say, what is that breed? It may be a real peculiar mixture, and it may look in general like something familiar, but you can't tell, they can't tell, and that would be the end of that family tree because, again, it's been neutered.
Yeah, yeah. Or, again, sometimes these animals are born infertile. They're just incapable of reproducing. So, yeah, who knows what we're going to get.
The thing about it is that these cases occur, and I know that your book concentrates on Texas, but these cases occur all over the world, basically. So unless there is some kind of general mutation that is starting to arise within the canid population worldwide, then it's rather unusual.
See, there's your movie premise. You mix Planet of the Apes with werewolves, and that's what you get.
There we go, Gene.
That's Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Wolves.
Well, and I'm citing the original series. No disrespect to the remakes, but, you know.
Well, one of the other aspects of this phenomena, and you know, I mean, I've been investigating cryptid creatures for more years than I would like to remember. And
is it 12,000 yet?
Yeah, almost, it seems like. But, I mean, I remember when the name Dog Band, I mean, wasn't a thing. So, okay, first of all, do you think that the name Dog Band has come about basically because people have been loath to say, I saw a werewolf?
Oh, that's a great question. And yes, I do think that. Because going back to what we talked about earlier, witnesses are very hesitant to come forward with these stories. And also, when you're talking about the paranormal community, when you're talking about, you know, 14 researchers, there's a hesitancy to, in my opinion, just based on my perception, and I feel this myself, there's a hesitancy to draw too many parallels to works of fiction, because that casts your research in a different light. So if you're saying you've seen something that's, you know, independent of pop culture that isn't necessarily described anywhere else, oh, well, it's a humanoid canine, we're going to call it Dog Man, I do think that plays a role, absolutely, because there is a need to differentiate between paranormal research and works of fiction. That being said, I'm partial to the term werewolf because, one, that's what the witnesses are describing, and two, if you go to, you know, the Germanic roots of the term werewolf, it literally means wolf man or wolf person or dog person. So me personally, I like to use those terms interchangeably, but I do understand the need to differentiate. I do understand why we have different terms and why there is a hesitancy on the part of some people to adapt the term werewolf when we're talking about cryptozoological study. Yeah.
We got more with Aaron, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Remember what you were doing 4 years ago at this very moment, and how much everything changed a year later. We don't live just anywhere. We live on a crowded island with daily news headlines that make our ancestors spin in their graves. And we all know that tougher days lie ahead. So the real question is, do you have a proper supply of emergency food on hand? If not, now's the time to get some. while things are still relatively calm. The company most Americans choose is My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com to get yourself a one-week supply of emergency food. It comes in a nifty ammo can that's loaded with delicious meals you'll love. No skimping with these meals, as you'll get 2,000 calories per day. You'll like the special $30 savings available this week only on this one-week supply of emergency food, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Attention, your money is now controlled by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000, 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Exploring strange creatures as opposed to strange aircraft. Tim, you were about to ask a question.
Quite a while back, all right, people were reporting seeing Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and a lot of times describe them as having, rather than a human face, having a muzzle, almost like a baboon type of face. And I've often wondered from these early cases if these weren't descriptions of Dogman, but of course at that point people weren't talking about Dogman. So, you know, you see a big hairy thing in the woods, and even though it's got a muzzle, you're going to describe it as Bigfoot.
Yes, and that's an important question, and there are two schools of thought on that. One is that, you know, people were misidentifying Dogman sightings for a long time because we had no context, because we had no frame of reference for it. And again, I saw a werewolf sounds literally insane. But then the other school of thought is that what we're seeing are misidentified Sasquatch sightings, and that these more canine looking breeds, if you like, more closely resemble baboons. Because admittedly, some of the descriptions we get for Dogman encounters say, yeah, it looked kind of like a baboon. So it's easy to kind of take that and go, oh, well, we have a subspecies of Sasquatch that looks like a baboon. Baboons are primates. Sasquatch is probably a primate. Put a pin in it and move on. I think in some cases there is the possibility for that. But again, if you talk to people like Jody Cook, who have been looking into this Dogman stuff for ages, you know, they'll tell you we need to go back and look at some of these older Sasquatch encounters, and we need to cross-reference them with what we can say are fairly implicitly Dogman encounters, because there's probably a lot of data that we don't have yet, you know. So two schools of thought, and as a writer, I get to take the coward's way out, and in the book, there's actually a chapter called The Sasquatch Connection, where we talk about that exact thing, is, you know, okay, well, what's the likelihood that these are just misidentified Sasquatch sightings? But the risk we run there, in my opinion, is trying to explain away one thing that we don't understand with something else that we don't understand, because technically, scientifically, we don't know what the heck a Sasquatch is. We don't know what it does, what it eats, where it sleeps. We don't know if it even exists in our dimensional plane, you know. So it doesn't work for me to say, okay, yeah, this is probably just a Sasquatch sighting, because I can't define Sasquatch. So, you know.
But that's the annoying thing about cryptid creatures, is that, you know, you go and look into it. I mean, there's a plethora of different things. I mean, you know, you got the Sasquatch, you got the Dogman, you've got the giant kangaroos of Kentucky and Tennessee. You've like the weird winged weirdos like the Mothman. And there's even been cases of werewolves seen with wings. So, you know, it's almost at times like we're at an interdimensional dumping ground of weird cryptid creatures.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things that contributes to the idea that all of these phenomena are connected. You know, like how likely is it that we have this many unidentified humanoid creatures lurking, you know, in the swamps and in the woods of the world? Like, how likely is that? I can't give you a statistical analysis other than to say that the world is a much bigger place than we can ever possibly, I think, perceive as human beings. Like, planet Earth is huge. There's a lot of stuff here. But, yeah, like, if it's not likely statistically that these things are animals we haven't found yet, what are they? Where are they coming from? What are their motivations? Is there something like the super spectrum that's projecting them into our reality? You know, it's, gosh, I can spend days there.
I was watching film that you did with Seth Breedlove, and I'm interested on your take of Native American ideas of what you're dealing with these things, and if they even would be willing to talk about it, because a lot of times it's considered, you know, taboo, that even by talking about it can invite not good things into your life.
Yeah, and that's another thing that inevitably comes up when you're talking about this stuff, because, you know, nowadays we talk more about the skinwalker, and that's kind of in the pop culture zeitgeist. It's in the paranormal community. It's something we talk about, but, you know, it's accepted that that's not something that persons of Native descent are eager to, you know, let folks from outside the tribe in on, because it is an important part of their cultural history. It's not something for mass consumption. So inevitably that does come up. And with some of these older folk tales, like the Bear King of Marble Falls, it's alleged that Native American peoples that lived in the Marble Falls region before the European settlers showed up were aware of this, you know, strange creature. The problem, you know, is when we start looking for details, like, okay, where is that recorded? What tribe? What's the source of information here? Like, you know, it's entirely plausible that we have Native American peoples that told this story and it, you know, was recorded by white settlers, and that's why we know about it today. But I think we have to be careful to say, okay, well, yeah, this is a Native American legend, if we don't know that unequivocally. And that was kind of the approach I took throughout most of the book. And then, you know, I met a guy named Nick out of Medina, the Medina Lake area, which is very thick with sightings of these things. And he's of Apache descent. He's a fifth-generation Texan. And, you know, he told me straight up, we know about these things. This is something my grandfather talked about. This is something my father had a sighting of in the 60s. You know, it's known that these things are out there. So, same with the witness I spoke to in San Antonio a couple weeks ago. She's also of Native American descent and said, yeah, I believe these things are real. So the witnesses I've talked to and the research I've done correlates that, yes, these things are a part of the Native American folklore in Texas. But again, I'm hesitant, always hesitant to lay that down as a fact, because we got to check our sources, you know.
I get the impression when I listen to this is that lots and lots of people in these areas have sightings of something strange, or know someone who's had a sighting, a friend or a family member. But unless you ask them, they're not going to tell you. I think about something that would happen often when the late Stanton Friedman, the UFO guy, was doing lectures. And he explained this, I've seen him do it, where he'd ask people, how many have seen a UFO? And a certain number of people raised their hands. Now, this next question, how many of you have reported seeing a UFO? And most of those hands will go down. So it's the same thing.
Absolutely, unequivocally. You know, once the question is asked, once, you know, you let someone know that you have an interest in their story, it's naturally going to be easier to share that and to come forward. And some of the witnesses I've talked to, you know, they said, I don't know why you're interested in this. I don't know why you want to talk about this stuff. And so we would explain, especially during the course of filming the documentary, that, well, You know, we want your story to be told the way you want it to be told, because right now all that's out there is the rumors and the headlines, you know, if there were any headlines. So when you express that interest and you let people know, hey, you're not the only one who's seen something like this, you're not crazy, and if you are crazy, a lot of us are crazy the same way, you know, a lot of other people are imagining the same thing. And that's something I've been super excited to see happen since the book and the film came out, is people like the lady in San Antonio have approached me and said, hey, actually, you know, I have a story about one of these things as well. I just didn't think anyone was interested. So
the thing I worry about, of course, is that once someone sees something, they might want to get in on the action, so they report something. Or they had an experience, but it's colored on the basis of what they see. Oh, then maybe it was that, maybe not this other thing I remember.
Yeah, there is some danger to that. You have to look at outside influences and what people are perceiving, especially, you know, with pop culture. Some of the data that I put in the book is, okay, well, how many werewolf movies were released during this decade that this sighting is reported? Not in every single case, because that would have been repetitious and become boring, but there are a couple cases where I'm like, you know, there were 22 werewolf movies released this year. How likely is it that this lady would have seen all of them before she called what she saw a werewolf? So, yeah, context and what we already know about is an important thing. And since now the Texas Dogman Triangle is out there and people are talking about it, you know, that's an awesome thing and I'm so excited about it. But inevitably you do have people that are like, oh, I want to jump on this bandwagon. I want to be a part of this. But, you know, we've had that problem in the Bigfoot community for years. We've had that problem in the UFO community for years. And I think in general we're getting better. I'm using the term we very loosely. I think we're getting better at kind of filtering that stuff down and going, okay, this seems like a credible witness. This does not seem like a credible witness. So, you know, it's impossible to do that every single time unless you know the witness personally.
We're going to have more with Aaron and Gene and Tim, more about strange creatures. Does that sound strange enough? You're in
the Podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you love reading about the mysteries of the universe? Do you wonder what secrets are hidden in the shadows of our own planet? If so, you won't want to miss these two amazing books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll explore the world of the mimics of man, beings that can look like us but are not. They've been among us since the beginning of history, hiding in plain sight, influencing our culture in ways we can scarcely imagine. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll discover the so-called hard evidence of UFOs that's been available for study this entire time, but for the most part has been ignored. These two books will open your eyes to a hidden reality that has been right in front of our eyes all along. That's Mimics, The Others Among Us, and Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. Available now on Amazon.com.
At Social Security, we are always thinking of ways to save you time and make things easier. That's why we created My Social Security. Opening a My Social Security account gives you secure access to your personal record and interactive tools tailored for you. You can see if you are eligible to receive benefits, view spousal benefit estimates, and compare retirement benefit estimates at different ages or dates when you want to start receiving benefits. Already receiving benefits? Use your account to change your address, set up or change direct deposit, get a proof of income letter, and more. In most states, you can also request a replacement Social Security card. Save time. Go online. Open a My Social Security account at ssa.gov/myaccount. Social Security. Securing today and tomorrow.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.